May it please the court. I'm Henry Davis. I'm the counsel for appellant who was the claimant before the Industrial Accident Board below. The claimant has filed an appeal to the decision of the Industrial Accident Board that approaches two separate avenues for relief. The first being that the board determined that its findings in this case terminated the total disability and did not justify any partial disability, but because of the Wendy's, Baker, and Thompson cases, was constrained to order that the termination was as of the date of the hearing. The petition had been filed for termination as of the date of the petition being filed. Therefore, the claimant's position is that there was an award to the claimant that would justify the costs of that presentation of a defense, even though the claimant was not successful in obtaining other benefits.
Mr. Davis, so if there had been no request to the board for the termination to be as of the date of the filing, but it was either silent or asked for termination as of the date of the hearing, we wouldn't be here, correct?
That's the position the claimant takes, that if, in fact, they had filed requesting termination as of the date the board
the answer is yes.
We would not have this problem.
All right, but it's also the case, is it not, that it wouldn't have mattered what the employer asked for, because our case law precedent established whereas here the claimant's treating physician, tells the claimant not to go to work, that's dispositive.
I believe that is correct. I do not understand why they cannot file a petition.
Okay, so basically your claim for attorney's fees and for expert witness fees is based on a scrivener's action that was of no legal import.
I don't believe that the board would permit one to continue collecting on the fund until the date of the hearing, unless one was going to present a defense. If one's not represented, they schedule a hearing rather quickly and have the claimant appear and then do a termination at that point. If one is represented, there's a scheduled hearing. And
I'm not sure that's responsive to my question. Your whole case, if I understand it, is based on the fact that the employer asked for a termination as of a date earlier than the date of the hearing.
As to that issue, yes.
Right. But the case law makes irrelevant, in this case, in these circumstances, what the employer asked for. So it's of no moment, is it, legally?
Well, I believe that the point is that the claimant has to present a defense to a petition that's been filed, even though, in my opinion, it was a foregone conclusion that if the medical...
Well, he would have had to present a defense anyway, would he not? That is, if the employer had come in and said, Industrial Accident Board, we want you to terminate as of the date of the hearing whenever you schedule it. Are you telling us that there would have been no defense presented by your client?
No. What I'm telling you is that the client would have presented a defense that I am presently on a no-work status, and under the law of this state, I'm entitled to rely on that, and therefore you cannot terminate as of the date of the petition.
Right.
Wouldn't it have been more than that? I'm still totally disabled.
That is the reason for the rest of the appeal, is that in
but
this
you don't separate them out, do you? It's a factual issue when the total disability, whether it's continuing, and if not, when it ended.
That's true, but they rest on separate bases.
Right. Well, help me understand this, because I'm confused by what you've said so far. As I understand it, there was the treating physician said your client could not work. So as a matter of law, he was entitled to collect as long as the treating physician said he could not work. The employer files a petition for termination. The earliest, as a matter of law, that the employer could have obtained relief is the date of the hearing. So we'll assume everybody knew the law and the petition never said terminate on the date of the petition. When we got to the actual hearing, your client would be saying, I'm still disabled.
That is correct.
And the employer would be saying, terminate on the date of the hearing. And that happened. And the board said, all right, we're terminating as of the date of the hearing. So on the merits at the hearing, your client did not prevail. Is that correct?
No, I don't agree with that. The petition that was filed was for the purpose of terminating as of the date of the petition, and that was the argument that was made.
No, I understand, but you remember the way I couched it? It was somewhat hypothetical.
Okay,
I said to you, assume everybody understood the law, assume that there had been no request to terminate on the date of the petition. There would have then been a hearing under a correct understanding of the law. The claimant would have said, I still want to collect. The employer said, no, you're no longer disabled. And in this case, that's what happened. The employer prevailed. Is that correct?
The employer prevailed as to future benefits, but not as to pending the petition.
Okay. I don't have any other questions.
I do. If I understand you, and I'm not sure that I do, you're suggesting that there is a practice, if you will, that in light of the Wendy's case, if there is a petition to terminate, the claimant can fight it by saying, well, I'm going to bring in a medical expert and I want a full hearing because I think I'm entitled to continue on disability, or the petitioner or the employee can simply yield to the fact that the employer is seeking termination, and that there's a difference in how soon you're going to get your hearing if you're protesting it, right?
It's a little more than that. There is the issue of when the hearing would be held normally if one is not going to present a defense. But there's also the fact that the medical testimony is essential to establish that that person is, in fact, on a no-work status. His own testimony has been held by the board in a number of cases not to be sufficient to establish that fact.
Okay, but what I'm trying to clear up is that if I understand you correctly, forget about the fact that the employer asked for termination before the employer was entitled to seek termination, okay? In other words, before the hearing.
Yes.
So we'll forget about that altogether. If I understand you, you're saying that your client obtained some very small benefit, but a benefit by simply having defended against the petition for termination and brought in an expert saying he's still disabled, and that for that reason the hearing was held at some later point in time, and that the number of weeks or months that your client continued to get benefits was extended simply by the fact that he was protesting the petition.
Essentially, that is correct.
And what I'm trying to find out is that has this become a practice in the workers' compensation bar, if you will, that the minute an employer files a petition to terminate disability, the employee either gives up or pays to have an attorney do essentially nothing more than mount a defense that's very unlikely to win, but mounts a defense arguably in good faith, and that way gets a few extra weeks or months? I mean, is that what's going on here?
No, I don't believe it is. In fact, when I go forward on a petition to terminate, I present a case based on the person continuing to be totally disabled, and while they're entitled as a matter of law under the Wendy's, Baker, and Thompson cases to have the board find that up to the hearing, they're entitled to be treated as totally disabled, whether the board finds they are or not. The argument is that it should go forward as to total disability. While I was not successful before the board in this particular instance, that is what is being presented, and it's not one of those things where frivolous defenses are raised simply to run out the clock.
Let me ask you another general question. When a petition to terminate is filed, and let's just for a moment put aside when they want the termination to occur. Mm-hmm. It's just the petition to terminate. And the claimant still gets paid. The question, my question is, whenever a petition to terminate is filed, do they automatically start getting paid from the fund, or does the employer's carrier sometimes pay?
The employer's carrier only pays if they're self-insured. If it's an insurance carrier, it comes from the fund, and the claimant must submit an affidavit that he is not actually employed as a result of the worker's comp injury and not receiving any kind of wages, and therefore is entitled to go on to the fund. If, for instance, a person who's partially disabled finds a job, they recite that in the affidavit.
I'm not concerned about the circumstances. I just want to know who pays. If a claimant is getting paid disability, and the and they're getting paid by, I assume, the employer's carrier, and then the employer petitions to terminate, the next week, does the check come from the fund or the employer's carrier?
From the fund.
All right. So then my question is, if the filing of a petition automatically changed the payment from the carrier to the fund, but we have this line of cases that say you don't have to work as long as you have a medical opinion that you shouldn't work, routinely, and the employer's carrier is always going to have to reimburse the fund when that disability ends in a termination, aren't they?
Unless the claimant concedes by the time of the hearing, which does happen because of the passage of time, they are recovered enough to go back to work. They'll do what's called a read-in, which is the board reads in the caption of the case and recites that there's no further.
No, I understand. So then I do understand this case. And what happened was when the board said you're terminated as of the date of the hearing, by having the employer's carrier reimburse the fund, that was simply business as usual. That would have happened all of the time anyway.
It should happen all of the time after the Wendy's, Baker, and Thompson cases. It certainly didn't before that.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, that's the law now. Great. Okay, I'm going to stop right there while I understand what we're doing.
Is it a factual option for the board to decide that the total disability was no longer existing as of the date of the petition?
Not under current law, no.
I said a factual possibility.
Oh, certainly they can find that, in their opinion, the medical evidence does not justify total disability as far back as the petition.
And in fact, we've said so in case law, correct?
Yes.
And if it is factually determined that that is not the case, but rather the disability ends as of the date of the hearing in the present tense, is that a factual finding or not?
It's based on a factual finding. The board has to reach certain conclusions based on medical evidence, and they would have to consider the two medical testimonies that were presented. But, yes, it's factual in that sense, yes.
All right.
Let me try it another way. Are you essentially asking the court to rule that any time an employee opposes a petition to terminate, the employee is entitled to attorney's fees and expert fees because there's a period of time between the date the petition is filed and the date on which the board determines that they're not continuing to be disabled?
Only where the carrier chooses to file a petition requesting the relief of termination as of the date of the filing. If they filed a petition that
So you're saying that because arguably here the employer made a mistake, that's why you're entitled to fees and expenses?
No, I don't think that is exactly it. I think that there is a practice on the part of carriers to file petitions requesting that because they've done that for years and years and years. And they simply have not changed that practice in light of the change of the law.
So, in other words, to the extent the carriers are ignoring the Wendy line of cases and by filing a petition to terminate and they wanted the benefits to end on the date of the petition to terminate, you're asking this court to award attorney's fees, and one of the benefits of that will be that all carriers will get a wake-up call about the law, and if they disregard the Wendy's holding and ask for termination on the date of the petition rather than the hearing, which is required by law, then they're going to be subject to paying attorney's fees.
Not just attorney's fees, but also the cost of the doctor to testify, which in many instances is the real expense for the claimant.
Help me understand what was argued factually before the board. You argued that the total disability was continuing, correct?
Yes.
And the carrier argued that it ended when?
As of the date of the petition being filed.
So that factual determination was resolved in your favor then?
Yes.
But your argument is whether that had been resolved in your favor or not by the board, they would have had no choice but to reach that conclusion under Wendy's.
Yes. And what I'm saying is that because they continue to file petitions requesting it as of the date of the petition, when the board is constrained to rule as of the date of the hearing, when there's a no work order, they have set themselves up for this problem.
Yeah, my next question is legally a distinction without a difference, but I'd still like you to answer it. Did the board conclude that your client was entitled to be paid because the board didn't believe his doctor, let me state it differently. Did the board make that determination based on Wendy's? Or did the board conclude that your client really was not disabled as the date of the petition or continued to be disabled? Did the board ever deal with any of that?
I believe that the formula of language that they use is intended to imply that they have no choice but to rule that as of the date of the hearing is the termination, and that the reason they do that is the Wendy's case.
Mr. Davis, I'd like to try to state your position in statutory terms and tell me if I have it right. Under the statute, your client would be entitled to attorney's fees and expert witness fees if the client received an award.
That is correct.
Now, your client here did not literally receive any award, but your position, if I understand it correctly, is that that he ought to be treated as if he had received an award because the employer either intentionally or by inadvertence asked the board to terminate as of the date of the petition rather than as the law prescribed the date of the hearing?
Essentially, yes.
Okay. And that is based on, you know, your policy argument that the insurers and the employers need a wake-up call in order to stop asking the board to terminate earlier than what our case law now prescribes.
I do think that unless something is said that establishes that
is
they
that
should
the
not be filing.
Is that the basis for the argument?
Pardon?
Is that the basis for your
Essentially,
argument?
Essentially, yes.
I've got another concern. Is it always the case that an employee is going to have a doctor who's going to say you're still disabled?
No.
So if that extra element were not present in this case, then the employer's petition to terminate as of the date of the petition could in fact be granted consistent with Wendy's, and that there would be no legal impediment to the board saying That's right. We find that your disability ended on the date of the petition.
That's correct. And in fact, in many of these cases, what the argument really is about is what the partial disability should be. That is to say, the doctor has them on restrictions, and there's an argument that the total disability continues, or if it doesn't, that the claimant is entitled to partial disability at a rate based on what's available to him. And as a result, there would be a defense to a termination petition in many instances where there was not a doctor's prescription that said no work, just one that said restricted work.
On page 11 of the board's decision is the first time they address the Wendy's case, and that's after they've decided that your client is fully capable of returning to full-time work in a light-duty capacity, and after they've decided he's not a displaced worker. And then they just end with, under Delaware case law, when a treating physician has instructed a claimant to stay out of work, that claimant is entitled to rely on the doctor's instructions and thus is considered temporarily totally disabled, regardless of actual physical condition, citing Wendy's. Thus, claimant's period of total disability officially ends the date of the hearing. Now, what does that mean in terms of the findings of fact that the board made? Is that basically an impeachment of their own finding of fact?
I don't think so, because the basis for the Wendy's line of cases is that we have a claimant who's been told by the treating physician not to work, and that the only way that they can work is if they take the risk of defying the doctor's orders and going back to work, which will be visited upon them if it makes their injury worse. The policy, as I understand it, is designed to prevent a claimant from having to make that choice.
Well, in terms of referring to the claimant's period of total disability officially ending, isn't the real issue when the employer's obligation to pay officially ends?
Yes.
And the board had the authority to determine that as of the date of the petition, correct?
Yes.
Did they address that specifically here?
Other than ordering the employer to repay the fund, no.
Well, that covers it, doesn't it?
I believe it does.
You want to save the balance of your time?
Please.
Before you rise, I have to excuse myself for a moment with apologies. I'm recently out of shoulder surgery, and it's hurting, and I'll be back in just a few minutes.
Please be seated.
Please.
Good morning, Chief Justice Steele. I hope your shoulder's feeling better.
Temporarily, totally disabled in the right shoulder.
I won't file a termination petition anytime soon.
As of the date of the hearing.
Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, good morning. May it please the court, my name is John Morgan. I represent the employer, Daisy Construction Company, who is the appellee in this case. I would also like to introduce to the court my associate, Amy Taylor. She was extremely helpful in the preparation of Daisy's answering brief to the court and also in preparation for today's oral argument.
But can you help us understand how these cases are operating? And my question relates to a petition for total termination. If the employer knows that the employee has a doctor's certificate that says you're disabled, and the employer carrier knows that the employee is entitled to rely on that. Now, the employer can still take the position, we contend, and we'll present medical testimony to the effect that they're no longer disabled at all. But given the state of the law, why would an employer or the employer's carrier ever ask for termination on the date of the petition rather than the date of the hearing?
I think the first thing that needs to be considered is what gives the employer or carrier a basis to file a termination petition in the first place.
We're talking about complete termination.
Right. In order to file a termination petition, I have to have a medical release from a doctor.
I agree. I'm talking about the other end of the equation.
Yes.
You've got a medical release from a doctor that said this person should be terminated.
Yes.
But you also know the claimant has a doctor that says the disability is continuing. You're totally confident when the board hears the two experts, they're going to rule in your favor.
Yes.
As they did in this case.
Yes.
My question is, if you know you can't stop paying until the date of the hearing as a matter of law, why would you file a petition for termination on the date of the petition?
I think that the main response to that question is there could be an argument that there is not a good faith reliance of the claimant on the doctor's certification of total disability. I'm not saying that argument would prevail.
Well, you'll have to elaborate because
right.
I can't even imagine a circumstance after Wendy's where the doctor says, don't go to work, that the employee would ever have to pay. Unless there was some fraud or something on the part of the doctor. But, I mean, that's a whole different case. I'm talking about in the general case after Wendy, why would an employer ever ask for termination on the date of the petition?
When the petition is filed, I don't believe the employer makes a representation one way or the other as to when it should be terminated. The petition is saying to the board, we want to bring this matter to the board's attention on the basis of a release that we have by a medical doctor.
Well, Mr. Murphy, given the Wendy's precedent,
yes,
which we have to presume that all the parties were aware of in this case at the time the petition was filed.
Yes.
Isn't it fair to say, or let me say it differently, what is it not the case that the filing of the petition here asking for termination of disability as of the date of the filing was a Scrivener's error?
I think a Scrivener's error implies that something was scribed in the first place.
That is either the lawyer who filed the petition didn't know the law, to take a more far-out case, deliberately disregarded it by asking for something that was legally impossible in these circumstances.
Well, in this case, the lawyer that filed the petition was myself, and I did know the law, and I filed it not specifying a date either way.
That's where we've, I think, made an assumption that the petition actually says disability benefits should be terminated as of the date of this petition, and you're telling us it said nothing of the kind.
The petition does not say that. Hmm. The petition says it's being filed because this claimant is medically able to return to work.
So you're saying
you argue at the hearing when the termination happened when? I mean, he was no longer disabled as of when, according to your evidence.
I don't recall arguing one way or the other as to the specific time of termination. In the context of a hearing, I'm trying to convince the board that the termination petition should be granted because this patient or this claimant, this employee, is able to go back to work. So I come to the board, I present the testimony of my medical doctor, Dr. Gurr in this case, and Dr. Gurr tells the board he can return to work.
Well, isn't it implicit in your argument by virtue of the filing of a petition to terminate that at least as of the time of the petition, you had evidence that the disability was over?
Of course. I would not be able to file the petition if I did not have that evidence.
So going back to my question to Mr. Davis, once you file your petition without a request for a date, you just say, I want a hearing, and I want this these payments to stop completely. As I understand it, the filing of the petition is what triggers the start of future payments from the fund rather than the carrier?
Two responses to that, Your Honor. When I file the petition, I'm saying I want these payments to be transferred to the fund while we sort out whether or not this individual may be entitled to partial disability benefits.
Yeah, and that's okay. I understand that.
All right.
And then when the board makes its determination,
yes,
because of Wendy's,
yes,
you're going to have to reimburse the fund in every case if there's a Wendy's affidavit.
If this matter actually goes to a hearing, I think it's a foregone conclusion that I will have to reimburse the fund, yes.
So,
what if a factual finding was made that the petition was valid or the determination should have occur as of the filing of the petition? Would you have to pay then?
To go back to Justice Holland's point, under the current case law, if that finding were to be made, it would have to be made based on some sort of a fraud or something.
Well, they can just believe one doctor over the other.
I think they would have to do more than just disbelieve one doctor. They'd have to believe that there was some type of a fraud involved.
Well, you're saying it's an impossible factual finding?
Not impossible, no.
But what would be the purpose of it? It would have no effect to find out, to make a finding that as of the date the petition was filed, the person was no longer disabled. The answer to that is, so what? Other than method of payment, because he still gets his benefits until the hearing.
You're absolutely right. And in fact, there is no mechanism for a claimant to repay to the fund any benefits that they've received. There are specific provisions for the carrier to repay to the fund, but the claimant, once he gets those benefits, he will never have to pay them back.
So the way the law is now is if a claimant has a doctor who says you shouldn't work, and that's unfortunate for the employer and the carrier, but unless it's fraud, the carrier is going to have to pay until the board says you're terminated.
Correct.
I thought the fund pays.
My question is the carrier pays by virtue of the reimbursement. The fund's making the payment, but ultimately the carrier pays.
I was following your logic and agreed, but Justice Ridgely, yes, I think you are right. The claimant is paid either way, but the claimant gets paid by the fund.
Your reason for going forward with this petition,
yes,
is your client doesn't want to pay any more money, correct?
I wouldn't say that they don't want to pay any more money. It's their position they don't want to pay ongoing total disability.
Okay. They don't want to pay ongoing total disability benefits.
Right.
And if you prevail on the factual finding that as of the filing of the petition, and it actually could theoretically have been earlier than that, but if you prevail factually that as of the filing of the petition, the claimant is no longer totally disabled, you don't have to pay the fund anything. You don't have to pay attorney's fees. You don't have to pay medical witness fees or anything, correct?
I agree, but I think under the current case law, the only way that I could prevail under that scenario is with a finding of fraud.
Why? Because he's either disabled or not.
Well, yes, he's either disabled or not, but the critical point is, when did the disability terminate?
When two doctors disagree, is there always fraud?
No, of course, no.
Okay,
no.
So if they accept one doctor's testimony over the other,
yes,
that's what happened here.
Yes.
And they could have decided, as a matter of fact, it was as of the filing of the petition or earlier where the disability ended.
Factually, I suppose that they could have, but they would be constrained by the Wendy's case,
which they cited. There may be different legal consequences, but factually they could do that.
Yes.
Can I get another point of order here? Does the employer typically know that the claimant has a doctor's order not to return to work? In other words, before you file your petition, obviously you've had your doctor examine the claimant, and your doctor has said, you know, I think he's ready to go back to work. Does the employer also know, as a matter of course, that the employee is relying on a doctor's certificate of his own doctor saying that he's not, that he's still totally disabled?
That's an interesting question, and it's changing under the new laws of the state. It used to be that a treating doctor did not have to express an opinion one way or the other as to work capability. And so I would be left with sorting through treatment records and trying to determine what that doctor's opinion is. Now the treating doctor is actually required to complete a disability certificate and indicate an opinion. This is what I think this individual is capable of doing.
Is that what happened in this case?
In this particular case, I think that it was clear to me when I filed the petition that Dr. Sopa, Mr. Porter's treating physician, was not releasing him to return to work.
Okay.
I don't recall specifically whether it was because of a form that was filled out mandated by the court or whether it was by virtue of reviewing the treatment records.
Well, our questions have raised two separate issues, and one of them is the issue in this appeal, and then the other is an interesting issue. And the issue in this appeal is whether, because the claimant was entitled to payment until the date of the hearing under Wendy's, that constituted some, that justified an award. Your position in the issue in this appeal is, since the claimant got what he was entitled to as a matter of law under Wendy's, there should be no award of attorney's fees.
Correct. I think...
Now, but let me go to the second issue.
Yes.
The second issue that our questions have raised is, if the claimant really wasn't disabled on the date of the petition, although the claimant is still entitled to rely on the treating physician and not work, should the law provide, notwithstanding Wednesdays that says he gets the money, and that the employer should not have to reimburse the fund, and that anyone who's relying on a doctor's certificate and getting payments, but getting them even when the board thinks they were not entitled to them on the date of the petition, should only get paid by the fund and not reimbursed by the employer's carrier? So that's the second issue that's not before us, but what's your position on that?
My position is that the fund was established for a specific reason, and it's a segregated fund from the State General Assembly. It's funded by insurance carriers, and I think you need to protect these funds so that they can serve the purpose of being available in a dispute exactly such as this when a termination petition is filed. So I believe it's probably best to require the carriers to repay the fund in due course, and I think that's the typical scenario. This case is absolutely typical of what happens in a
scenario. Well, is that mandated by statute? Whether it's good policy or not, it's not the issue for us. Is it mandated by the statute?
I don't believe that it is mandated by the statute, no. I think it's just due course of how
that's the
board
practice.
Operates. Right, it's the practice.
Okay, Mr. Morgan, let's go back to the issue that is before us. I have one question. The entire claim of error here, I think we've established, rests on the factual contention.
Yes.
That your petition to terminate disability asked the board to terminate as of the date of the petition. Your response is no, we didn't ask the board to do that. The petition was silent on that question. All of which, I suppose, amounts to a response that there is no factual basis. That is, the factual predicate for the legal argument being made here by the appellant doesn't exist. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement, and I would also say
if that is a fair statement,
yes,
that would basically dispose of the entire appeal, at least from a legal standpoint. Is that correct?
I'm not going to disagree with that statement.
Why then wasn't it written in your brief in bold letters, you know, that one line that would have clarified all this? I'm just curious because I'm confused after having read your brief that rather simple response which would have clarified at least where we were, was never made.
I don't think that issue became crystal clear for me until we got here today, quite frankly. I can tell you that I was focused and prepared to argue the case of Wendy's for the proposition that I obtained from the board absolutely the best result that I could have obtained in this context. There was a dispute between the medical experts. Claimant relied on his expert that says he couldn't work. Wendy's therefore applies. Therefore, the earliest available termination date is date of hearing, or alternatively, no termination at all. So I got the best result that I could have achieved for my client.
Well, you could have got a better result, couldn't you? If it had been as of the date of the petition, you wouldn't have to reimburse the fund.
If it had been as of the date of the petition, it wouldn't have stood up on appeal. The board would have committed legal error, and it wouldn't have stood up. The Superior Court would have said, you misapplied Wendy's, and we're bound by
this. I'm talking about your obligation to reimburse the fund.
Yes.
You're saying that the board has no authority to release you from that as of the date of the petition?
No, I'm not saying the board has no authority to do that. What I'm saying is, as a practical matter, the board routinely does order a reimbursement to the fund. And I believe that the purpose for that is to preserve the financial integrity of the fund.
So they're making findings unsupported by facts.
They made a medical finding as to that this person was able to return to work. Then I think they made a legal finding under Wendy's that because there was a certification from the treating doctor that this claimant was relying on, he's not, and he's allowed to rely on that, and therefore they can't terminate benefits until date of hearing.
I understand your position that it's the culture of, apparently, of the board to always order reimbursement. But in terms of what the law is and what the law allows the board to do under appropriate facts, you could have had a better result.
If I was able to prove some type of fraud, I think that would have gotten a better result.
So just having them believe your doctor that the disability ended September 8th, 2008.
I don't know how they could have believed the doctor and awarded the termination to me earlier in the face of the Wendy's decision.
I'm talking about your obligation to reimburse the fund.
I'm sorry.
You could have got a better result.
I suppose I could have gotten a better result theoretically. As a practical matter, I've not seen a result like that, and I've been practicing in this area before the board for 10 years.
Well, perhaps we should tell the board that then.
That's obviously your prerogative to do so, Your Honor.
Let me go back to my confusion. I think each of us have demonstrated that we're all struggling to figure out what in practical terms this is all about. And I at least was under the impression that the very fact that the claimant here was opposing your petition required the claimant to hire an attorney and the attorney to pay expert witnesses and have a full hearing, and that if the claimant had not gone through that process, his benefits would have terminated significantly earlier because the hearing would be held, you know, the following week instead of 4 months later. Is that factually correct or not?
I believe that is not factually correct. It would be my burden of proof to establish before the board two things. One, that this individual is medically able to return to work. And in order to do that, I would need to present expert testimony.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the claimant. And
right.
If the employer has filed a petition to terminate, the employer has the doctor ready to go.
Right.
But the claimant is now faced with a dilemma, arguably. The
yes.
dilemma being that the claimant has some basis to argue that, no, you're wrong, but on the other hand, would have to hire an attorney and get his doctor to be an expert witness, and that all of that is a cost that the claimant would have to incur.
I respectfully disagree. I think the claimant could meet their burden of proof by, well, they don't have a burden of proof, but they could meet the burden of rebuttal by coming before the board and saying, my doctor is Dr. Sopa, and he has certified me as totally disabled, and I've relied on that. Then I have to overcome that.
Would you be allowed an attorney to say that for him and cite the Wendy's case and provide all that advice?
I think the board, if they were faced with an individual who did not have an attorney, would ask pointed questions to elicit that kind of testimony.
If a claimant is not opposing, you know, if an attorney doesn't appear for the claimant, is the hearing scheduled any sooner? I've heard something about a read-in hearing or something like that.
Yes.
Does that happen a lot earlier than a contested hearing would be scheduled?
A read-in hearing is a mechanism that is typically associated with a settlement. If I am opposing an unrepresented claimant, I would still have to carry my burden of proof unless I arrived at a settlement.
Well, let's go back just to you filed a petition. My question is if there's a pro se opposition as opposed to opposition with a lawyer.
Yes.
Does that affect the scheduling, or is the scheduling simply driven by the opposition?
That would not affect the scheduling.
Once the claimant says, no, I disagree, it's going to be scheduled X weeks out, just as if the claimant had a lawyer who said the claimant disagrees.
And I have had more than one hearing where I have had to go through the process in front of the board at the regularly scheduled time of presenting the medical expert testimony and the labor market survey person to testify as to work availability in the labor market. Otherwise, the board cannot, in my opinion, issue an order terminating total disability. So yes, it would not be a shortened process if I have to go through all the steps. And the process, to remind the court, is fairly short anyway. I mean, when you file a termination petition, there's an expedited scheduling requirement, and it's supposed to go to a hearing within 120 days. So,
before I lose sight of what I thought was our purpose here, which was to determine whether there was a benefit conferred upon the claimant as a result of attorney's representation and an appearance in some form of a medical expert, we drifted into whether or not the carrier got a benefit by being relieved of payment to the fund or having to pay into the fund. Isn't the focus of this appeal whether or not an attorney and an expert witness gained any additional benefit to the claimant than he would otherwise have had?
Yes.
Did he gain any benefit as a result of being represented at the hearing on the theory that there was a theoretical danger that the board might terminate as of the filing of the petition, even though that wasn't requested? Under circumstances where everyone knew what was going to happen at the end of the day, was that disability benefits could not be terminated until the date of the hearing?
In my opinion, no.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you.
It's been my experience in picking up cases that petitions for termination have already been filed in, that the board schedules very promptly a hearing for pro se litigants, that once I enter an appearance, almost always there's a much later hearing scheduled.
Mr. Davis, can you direct the court to any part of the record in this case where the employer said, we want benefits terminated on the date of the petition?
I was just looking through the appendix, and I cannot find a copy of the petition. The petition, of course, is a form created by the board, which has not changed at all since the Wendy's case, and essentially asks for termination as of the day it's filed.
Well, Well, you're going to have to give us a record cite so we can read that.
Isn't there a difference between the petition saying, as of the date I'm filing this in good faith, I believe that the claimant is no longer disabled, and a statement that says, I not only believe that as of the date I'm filing this that the claimant is no longer disabled, but I want his benefits cut off as of the date I file this, not as of the date of a hearing where I have to present proof that he's disabled?
I think there's a significant difference, but I don't think that the minimal pleadings that we have before the Industrial Accident Board support any kind of a distinction like that.
All right, now we've come from the petition asks for benefits to be terminated on the date of filing to the petition, which isn't in the record, is silent on that point. Now, which is accurate? It either did or did not say we want benefits terminated on the date of filing.
That's why I was looking for a copy of the petition, and I was not able to find it so that I can categorically say one way or the other.
But you did in your opening argument.
My belief is that they were seeking termination as of the date that they filed it because they were basing it upon their expert's opinion that he could return to work and presented a labor market survey saying that all of these jobs were available to him during that time.
Either is or is not a distinction between saying, in good faith, on the day I file this petition, I believe the claimant is no longer disabled, and a claim for termination of disability benefits as of the date of filing. Isn't that a meaningful distinction?
I believe it is, but I believe that the board always treats it as though it were a claim to terminate it as of the date it was filed. That's the practice of the board.
Always, even in the face of a certificate from a doctor saying continue to work, and Wendy's?
In my experience, that's exactly how they approach it. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Right.